Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, there to be different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, medium wave 1548 in Satellite Islam. And we are truly, truly blessed. And again, extreme weather conditions, looking out the window of Radio Islam, beautiful bright skies. We've had high temperatures, very unlikely for, you know, this month, at this time of the year, into March. And we find that we still have temperatures in the highs, you know, upper 20s going to 30s. And mornings getting a little bit colder in the evenings, but truly, truly blessed. And we have had some rain in between. We are entering in a phase that's in between. You know, when you have seasons that are in between, it's very, very difficult. And we're going to be talking to Andrea. Andrea's been with us for so many programs, always have so much to share with us, so much to tell us. And we're going to be enjoying her company for the next 45 minutes or so until 9:30. And if you have any queries, any questions, remember to join our conversation on the code 011-854-1548. Hi, good morning, Andrea.
Good morning to you.
Thank you very much. Yes, a lovely, bright morning. Are you keeping well? Have you come back from your walk?
I am actually keeping very well indeed. We are here in the pouring rain, which is actually very, very welcome. So if you hear the occasional thunder, your very nice technical guy said I should tell you that I'm standing in the rain freshening up.
Well, typical of Muhammad to say he's having a shower in the rain, but whatever it is, you are truly, truly fortunate. We have had, you know, Andrea, it's already getting into the, you know, it's getting entering the second week of March. The first we come to an end, and temperatures are still quite high on our side. We've had them, you know, scorching here, temperatures. We're in the upper 20s going to 30s, you know, so it's a bit of a concern, and it's an in-between season. You know, when you get an in-between, you're just leaving, you know, summer, it's not like winter, it's in-between, and we really don't have those beautiful autumn hues. Just as I stepped in, somebody said to me the pollen content is very, very high, and for people who suffer from allergies, I think that's a huge challenge, isn't that?
That certainly is true. It depends on your vegetation, what time of the year you would normally get it. Over here, normally ours is in the early spring when the, unfortunately, invader wattles go into full bloom. And then anyone who tends to suffer from sinusitis, allergies, and so on is affected. And, of course, there where you are, if I'm not mistaken, the syringas are in full flower, another invader plant with an extremely high pollen load.
So, you know, so whilst we're getting into this in-between season, we do have people who have some, you know, views, you know, sort of infection. What do you call an infection? What would you call this allergy? I don't really know. It's not an infection, is it?
No, it's not. What actually happens is your immune system misidentifies pollen. So normally when your immune system is fighting something off, you will tend to get, you know, the runny nose, the runny eyes. And basically, your immune system decides that the pollen is something foreign that it needs to fight. And that's why you actually even can get feverish and really feel unwell.
Thank you very much for that explanation. Now, Andrea, you know, being an in-between season is not very easy. People are not too sure. Is it time for them to rip up all the plants that are still blooming at this time? Or is it time for them to sit back and wait for it to die? Or is it now time for them to start, you know, getting the gardens ready for winter? So it's an in-between season. On our side, again, I was talking to somebody yesterday. You know, we've had this late rains. We have lots of rains in between. You know, we've had buckets full about 6 or 7 days ago. And, you know, things are still in full bloom. If you look around us, I was looking at the begonias and looking at lots of the plants, you know, still, you know, in their full glory. And people are saying, well, is it not time for us to be taking things out, or should we be waiting? The earth hasn't cooled enough, although the temperatures in the evenings have, you know, lowered to a certain extent. And is it low enough for us to start thinking about winter gardens? I said, look, I don't really know. And in autumn gardens, what are we going to be doing? So it's an in-between season. You're bidding farewell to one season, about to welcome another season, and not too sure what to be done.
Well, of course, we have to look ahead because we are gardeners and we work with nature and we work with the seasons. So we start looking ahead to the next season whenever we're in a season. So right now, yes, you're enjoying your summer flowers still. Some of the autumn flowering plants have already started to bloom in the wild of the indigenous plants that I see around. So, yes, it definitely is sliding into autumn now. And if you don't want a big gap in your garden, you need to start thinking about winter, especially if you want to grow things from seed. So certainly at this point in time, you should be thinking of your winter vegetables for your winter vegetable garden. Weather's going to get cold soon. Some of your things, obviously, are year-round, and you can do them any time. But certain things really just love winter. Specifically, I'm thinking now of green peas, how nice that is to have in your garden. And, of course, all the cabbage family, cabbages, broccolis, cauliflowers, all of those things, they're going to start coming in now if you want to sow your seeds. And things like celery, they're also very winter-tolerant. There's actually a lot you can grow in your vegetable garden in winter. So the time has come to prepare for that. And then with your flower garden, with your annuals specifically, obviously your perennials, you're not going to rip out. And you're only going to prune them after flowering. And if they slightly frost tender plants, you might want to wait until the spring, because you don't want to have too soft growth when the cold weather comes in. It just depends when you start getting your first frosts. For example, where I am, we're probably only expecting our first frosts in about late June. So I can still get away with pruning my shrubs after flowering at this point. And we also don't get very hard frosts. But if you get hard frosts, you don't want the very, very soft growth. So you're not really going to be looking at pruning unless it's hardy plants and unless your frost is still a little way away. You don't want to have too much young stimulated growth on your plants. You're also going to, with your annuals, you're going to be looking at freshening up your annuals to stay. It's still a little bit hot for things like pansies and violas. They like cold weather. And, you know, when I worked in the seedling industry, we used to start our pansies and violas, actually even earlier than this, we used to start them in the summer already. And we used to have a lot of losses because they don't like the heat. So I would suggest rather get them in packs. Go to your nearest Life as a Garden Center and get plants that are already growing if the weather is starting to cool where you are. Otherwise, wait a little bit longer. And put that in between your summer annuals, which is still looking good. But remember those summer annuals, as soon as the frosts come, they're going to be cut back. By the frost, it's going to be over. So you want to have this constant succession of color coming into your garden. So that's for your annual flower garden. And then, of course, for the autumn, we can expect to see some lovely things coming into flower. And they flower according to day length, some of them according to temperature and some a combination of both. And there's always something that triggers a plant to flower. And even a chink of light will tell them that it's daytime. So we used to even do forcing and for people that actually have things like poinsettias that they want to flower out of season. That is a day-length orientated plant. Our plectranthus, which are coming into bloom already, they're also day-length orientated. They wait for the days to start shortening. When the days start shortening, they know that's their signal and they come into bloom. And they remain in bloom basically until the weather starts warming, well actually not even the weather, it's the day length again. When the days start getting longer, then they decide, no, that's it, okay, we finished flowering. So the plectranthus is going to be fantastic, and they're so variable. You get ground covers, you get shrubs, you get blue and purple and pink, and they're very, very stunning. Some of them grow in sun, some of them grow in shade, so do check. But yes, there's some lovely things coming into flower now for the autumn.
Thank you very much. You know, listen to you. It's just so fascinating to know that plants have its own time clock, you know, knowing exactly when the days are going to lengthen or when it's going to shorten. And once that indication and have that, then, you know, they decide, well, it's time for us to bloom or it's time for us to, you know, wilt and die down, whatever the case may be. I think, and just listening to that, I think there's so much that we can learn from these plants. Now, Andrea, you know, with the weather patterns that we've had, the extremities of weather, the late rainfalls, and there was a prediction of loss of rain into March. Not sure if that's still going to happen, but whatever the case may be, some of the plants will be sort of completely confused. I'm looking at the roses. Would roses still have a later flush, you know, with all this weather, with this warm that we've had? You know, they may have had the second flush, and now with the rains that we've had now aside and the warmth, were they going to a third flower, or do you think it would be time for them to some dormant and then to prune them or to wait? I know normally we prune the roses only around about August again, but what would happen in this case?
Well, actually, it's a very similar situation to what we always have where I live, where we don't have very cold winters and we get rain, a lot of rain in winter. What normally happens there is you will get roses My roses, okay, then again, as I said, I don't get really frost. It's certainly not where I planted my roses. They will actually even flower into the winter. And I actually have to wait a lot longer before I prune them, because otherwise they flush too quickly after pruning because of the warm temperatures. I think it's the warm temperatures in this case, I stand corrected, if it's not. So if you're having a warm winter and you're not getting frost and your roses are growing very actively, you don't want to prune them at the usual time, because otherwise the bushes are going to be too vigorous and too big by the time summer comes around. It will also affect your flowering. I love roses, but my area is not the best area for growing roses. They actually like that cold winter. They like that dormancy, taking a little break from all the flowering and resting up. And if they don't get that, it will affect flower quality as well in the coming year. Also, with a lot of rain, you can expect to start seeing probably quite a lot of leaf fungal diseases, your mildews and your black spots and so on. And that's quite easy to deal with. So do remember that you should pop around your garden center. There are organic things that one can use for roses. And then, of course, there are also chemical pesticides that, although they're chemical pesticides, they are relatively safe as long as you follow the instructions.
That's important. That's so important.
They drummed that into us at college. Read the leaflet that comes with the poison. They drummed it into us, I think, every year that I was studying university. And every exam I wrote, I had to write, read the label. But although it sounds like such a very obvious thing to do, a lot of people don't. And that's where household pesticide accidents happen, even with your indoor household pesticides, because people don't read the safety precautions. And even organic pesticides are not necessarily good for you. They're organic, yes, but some of them are actually on the poisonous side. So you always must follow the safety precautions when you use any kind of pesticide. And the place where you find that is on the label. So always read the label. I do suggest it very strongly. There are thousands of pesticide accidents around the world every year. And store your concentrate safely out of reach of children.
That's so important, you know, that many of us are sometimes neglectful and then leave these containers all around, and children come in, and like you said, an accident is just waiting to happen, and then the consequences are really disastrous, and we do have accidents that are reported regularly. Now, just again, you know, about roses. Roses, you know, historically coming from very cold climates, the northern hemisphere, Turkey originally, and then from then to Europe and so forth. So I understand that, you know, they need the cold temperatures for it to, you know, grow. And sometimes if you don't get, you're not going to have a very good flush, so that is important for roses. Just a point that I picked up from you. Now, Andrea, going on, you said you had some rain. Tell us something about the rain. You know, just at that side of the world, you normally have winter rainfall. Is it a bit too early to have had rain, or is it seasonal?
We're actually very fortunate here. We get a little bit of rain all year. And with the majority of the rain falling in the winter. But we do get a little bit of rain through the summer. We're sort of sitting nicely on the boundary here of the Eastern Cape, which is summer rainfall, and the Western Cape, which is winter rainfall. And when you're in these boundary areas, you're actually in a very, very fortunate position weather-wise and ecology-wise. So, for example, you have two ecosystems. There is never going to be a direct line down the middle that says, okay, from now on you are Eastern Cape vegetation and from this point on you're sandbush. It's not going to happen because that's not how nature works. The boundaries are very fuzzy. As human beings, we need to draw lines on maps, and we do that, and we say this is this vegetation area and this is this vegetation area. But on each of those lines, for several kilometers or even several hundreds of kilometers, depending on the local conditions, you get an area which is called the ecotone. And in that area, you will find plants and wildlife that belong to both the neighboring areas, gradually fading in to the new vegetation type. So that's where I am right now.
Very, very fortunate. And, you know, the rainfall, like you said, is a soft one. So, you know, that's what we need. Sometimes we need this soft rainfall because then, you know, it allows for the ground to soak in the water. And you find that, you know, new vegetation is easy to grow thereafter. And the ground is very much softer. So very, very fortunate. Now, on our side, again, getting into, well, like I said, the second week of March, you know, unseasonally warmer temperatures than normal. What sort of guidance do we give people and say to them, fine, we want them to garden, what should we be doing? I'm not too sure about what's happening out in the KwaZulu-Natal area. It's still a little warmer. What sort of guidelines do we give them? What do we tell them to hold on? Andrea, let's unpack some of that.
Well, I would actually say don't hold on, because the weather is changeable, like the weather. I can't think of a better simile for it. And sometimes, you know, a winter comes in like a pussycat, uh-huh. and then turns into a lion. And quite often, you know, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, I personally think I have, where you have a very hot summer, and a winter that comes in late, but when that winter comes in, it's quite brutal.
I beg your pardon, repeat that one, when winter comes in late.
It can sometimes be quite brutal.
Yes, it would. And just on that point before you continue, someone has said they've read the first of our cold spells, and I thought, where do they get that information from? Around about 25th March, I said, it's only the second week going to March, how do they know about the 25th? Well, in any case, that's what somebody had said, that is what they're predicting. Around about 24th March, we're getting our first cold snap. So there it is. So like I said, coming in before you know, Mohammed's smiling, I said, well, before you know, really, you've got that, well, that big, well, whatever it is. I don't know, what do you want to call it? Because I must say to you that some people just love the cold weather. I'm not one of those that really, but other people just waiting for that winter to go.
Well, I've got a funny theory. May I ask you, when is your birthday? Is it in summer or is it in winter?
Midsummer.
Exactly. And I ask so many people this question, and I would say about 90%, maybe more, will say that their favorite season is the season they were born in. So I think when we come into the world and we open our eyes for the first time, we just think it's beautiful.
Mom is shaking his head. I don't think he'd be... Well, whatever it is, Andrea. But, you know, as you said, coming in, you know, before you realize you're getting this cold weather, and when this cold weather does hit you, you find there's lots of things that are going to happen. Let's take some of those things. So we're not going to wait for the weather to happen. We're going to prepare for this. We're going to plan for that. And we're going to be doing some of the things that we need to do in our gardens. And that's the right way to do. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And do you start your winter things now? When you're doing the seasonal gardening, which is mainly your vegetables and your annuals. With the annuals, I would say rather you can wait a little bit and then get six packs, but if you want to sow seed, it's now. The same with your winter veggies. And remember, you are going to stagger your sowing. You're not going to sow everything at once. You're going to sow every few weeks so that you don't have this sudden feast or famine situation in your vegetable garden. But you're definitely starting to put in your winter things. It's also time to look out for bulbs. They're going to be out and about. And it is planting time for a lot of your spring flowering. So now we're even thinking two seasons ahead. Things like Dutch iris, your daffodils and narcissi. Some of these things are absolutely beautiful. They're well worth having in your garden. And plant them right at the front where they can really, really show off. Because absolutely stunning blooms that you get out of these spots, you have a little bit of patience. But the wonderful thing about them is they're so easy to grow. You put the bulb in and it grows. I very, very, very seldom had any problems with my bulb. You can feed them a bit if you want, but quite a lot of them are adapted to poor soils, specifically your daffodils and narcissi. You don't want to overfeed them because otherwise you end up with floppy flowers. So I generally just put in my bulbs and they grow. So that's happening now. You need to be on the lookout for things like as well. So, yeah, be ready for your spring flowering bulb, which you're going to be planting now.
Okay, just let's go back again, some of the things that we should be doing. Okay, I want to just take on the one other, the feast and the famine. My own experience, you know, this year just planted rocket before. Lo and behold, I had lots of rocket I couldn't use. So, you know, what you said is make sure that you plant, you know, and you spread the or you pace it in so that you don't have all at one time. I think that's so important. Now, the other thing that you're speaking about was bulbs, Andrea. You know, many of us make this mistake about planting bulbs and planting too deep, perhaps. I think that's one of the things that I've learned over the years. That when you plant, to make sure that you plant them in, you don't lose them underground. Is that correct?
It depends on the bulb. And that's unfortunately the answer for most things related to nature. That depends. Generally, yes, the mistake that most people make is planting them too deep. Some bulbs want to be planted deep. So in order to know, always check, and we're going to go back to the label. All the good bulb suppliers will supply you with bulbs in a packaging that will give you planting instructions saying how deep you should plant. Some of them even provide a little, on the card at the top of the bulb, like a little ruler with a mark on it that you can use to measure how deep you're going to plant. Also, never plant your bulb upside down.
That's another big mistake, watch point.
Sometimes it's not easy to see the top and the bottom of the bulb. And the advice is, if you're not sure, plant it horizontally.
Okay, that's a good tip.
If you're not sure, because when in doubt, if you plant it upside down, it's definitely going to die.
You know, I think that's where many of us seem to fall. Andrea, we're going to go for a news break. When we come back, we'll talk about bulbs and what we could do and some of the watch points. I will chat about that after the news break.
Fantastic.
Thanks. Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. We are here to be different. My name is Ismail Bariyawa. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in with us via the audio streaming, medium wave 1448 and satellite Islam. And we've had some queries coming through. We've had wonderful guests. And remember, we are talking about an in-between season. We've got a wonderful guest, that's Andrea, and she's helping us along with some of our queries and questions as well, and advising us what is to be done in our gardens at this particular time of the year. Hi, good morning, Andrea.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for talking about bulbs, and we're going to look at bulbs again and some ideas around bulbs. And then I would like you to also look at hydroponics, and we'll talk about that as well. Let's go back then. We said we could plant bulbs horizontally if you're not too sure whether it has to be planted in any particular, whether it's up or down, you know, if you're not very sure. So a good watch point is perhaps to plant it then horizontally, so they would definitely have a chance of survival. Continue with that, Andrea.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, you get some, and ranunculus is one in particular, that is, it's a very knobbly bulb. It looks very weird. It's sort of flattish, and then it's got knobbles on both sides. Now, mm-hmm. some of those knobbles will produce roots, and others of the knobbles will produce leaves, but you don't necessarily know which. And if you're not sure, plant it sideways. Ideally, it would be best if you can identify the top and the bottom of the bulb. And some of them, it's really easy. I mean, for example, your daffodils and narcissi, they've got a little point towards the top. You can see exactly where the leaves are going to come out. The fat portion of the bulb is like the bottom of an onion, and you can see easily which is the top and which is the bottom. But some bulbs are weird. They look like little blobs or something.
Yes, I think some of them, not even sure how you can describe them, because they're not round, they're not oblong, you're not even sure what. It's all just knobbly.
It's just a knobbly thing. And to me, you know, I've been gardening for so long. My grandmother was an avid gardener. I've been in the horticultural trade for over 20 years. I've been growing so many plants. I've been growing them by the thousands. But what is still amazing to me every time it happens is when a bulb starts to sprout, when a seed starts to germinate, when a cutting starts to root. You plant this thing and you have this slight doubt in the back of your mind. No matter how long you've been doing it for, no matter how easy you know the plant is, you put this thing in and you go, don't tell me this is going to grow. It's ridiculous. And it does. And it grows and it rewards you with beautiful flowers. So bulbs in particular are well worth waiting for. You know, your annuals and so on, lots and lots of color, very short lifespan, and then it's over. Not usually the very big, very exotic, very attractive flowers either. They're pretty, they're colorful. But if you want really big, really exotic, really colorful flowers, the kind of thing that you can use as cut flowers and bring into your home and so on, then bulbs are really a great way to go.
Yes, and just to help us a little bit along, you know, and I must say I was fascinated when I saw this a couple of years ago, where, you know, bulbs are planted in containers with hydroponics. You plant them three or fives, whatever the case may be. And then you see them sprout, and narcissus, I think, is one of them. There's a couple of them that you can, you know, really plant, and they make a stunning display. It becomes, you know, on a dressing, and maybe in the dining room and on the side, but whatever the case may be. And you find that, you know, it attracts, it becomes a watch point, because you find it's not only the bulbs, but it's also the roots, and a lot of that happening. Take us through some of those things.
Well, of course, the most famous of those is the hyacinth. A beautiful, beautiful plant. If you're not familiar with it, it makes a short spike, very compact, packed with hundreds, I haven't ever counted, but it must be hundreds, of scented blooms that actually glisten when they get a little bit of light on them. It looks almost as if they've been sprinkled with glitter. That's a fine detail. Obviously, it's a gorgeous detail. And you usually get them in pink, white, or blue. Very attractive. And if you look around, you'll usually find them being sold somewhere as a novelty item. where you get a little bulb glass. It's perfectly designed for the bulb to sit in without having its whole self in water. Because what you want is you want the bulb to get water from the roots, but the bulb itself, you don't want submerged because then it will rot. So they solve the problem for you very neatly with this little vase that you put the bulb in, and just the bottom of the bulb is in contact with the water, and then it starts to grow roots, and then it starts to grow leaves, and then in the spring it flowers, and it's really a pretty fun thing to do. Great for kids. I did my first one when I was a kid, and it was like, I wanted to see every new leaf that came out there. I was so excited. So it's a fun thing for kids. It's an educational thing for kids. For adults, it's actually amusing. And as you said, a talking point looks very attractive. Daffodils and narcissi, yes, it can be done, but it's trickier. Because as I say, you've got the same problem. The roots do like a lot of water, but you don't want the bulb submerged. I normally suggest with daffodils and narcissi, if you want a nice indoor feature, get a nice pot and plant them close as as you can. They can be touched in that pot, so that you're going to get this absolute bouquet of flowers coming out. And then I would still suggest, unless you get extremely cold weather in winter, which I don't think anywhere in South Africa really does, maybe with the exception of one or two areas in the mountains, you would normally just keep that outdoors and grow it outdoors until the flowers happen, and you water it regularly. Because you've got a very dense population of little flowers and bulbs growing there. And then when it begins to flower, that's when you bring it into the house. And you've got this wonderful bouquet of growing flowers, that is a beautiful feature. In the springtime especially, those nice, cheerful narcissi. The paper whites are the best for that. Paper whites are difference between daffodils and narcissi is that daffodils have big flowers and narcissi have spikes of flowers that are bunched together and tiny. So your daffodil has got a sort of one or two flowers and they're big, and the narcissi have the very closely packed flowers that still look the same as a daffodil, but they're smaller and carried on a single flower spike. So the paper white are ideal for pot cultivation and very easy to do.
Yes, I think those paper whites are just stunning and you find them, but a little bit early to get them. I think it's still early in the season. I think we've got to wait a couple of weeks before they really come on.
It will be a couple of weeks, yes.
Yeah. I think we're, you know, towards the end of, around about May or so, maybe, you know, that's the time you find them in the garden centers. It's a bit too early, but bulbs are an important and interesting, you know, feature to have in the garden. And something about bulbs is that the other thing before I talk about, you know, is that Andrea, bulbs, you sometimes would have them planted and then bloom, and thereafter you lose them. You're not too sure what happens to them because they are just left in the ground, and then later on you plant things around them. And then next year they come up, you know, that happens at times, doesn't it?
Well, when you buy bulbs, it's always good to do a little bit of homework. You get some bulbs that will naturalize beautifully, depending on your area. For me, certainly, and when I lived in Pretoria as well, Dutch iris, wonderful naturalizer. It just settles into your garden. It pops up when it's time to grow, and it sleeps when it's time to sleep, and you don't have to do anything. But a lot of your bulbs, you actually have to lift after flowering. Lift them, actually take them out of the ground so that they don't get moisture during their dormancy at all. And store them away somewhere in a nice aerated sort of condition. So usually you would want to have a tray that you can spread them out on. You can use brown paper bags, but then make sure that you've dried them properly before you put them in the brown paper bags. And then, of course, you've got to remember the planting season when the planting season comes around. And you also need to check with the type of plant, because some of them are groomed for literally, I think with tulips it's 3 years, where they actually groom these bulbs to produce the most amazing flowers. But that only lasts once. After that, the bulb passes its optimum size, and it starts to make babies that don't flower as well. But a lot of bulbs you can lift and store and plant them again the following year. So you do need to do a little bit of homework like that. Usually, again, read the label. A good supplier will tell you how to take care of your bulbs, including lifting and storing, if that is necessary.
I've got a query coming through. I have an amaryllis plant in a pot. Should I put them into the ground?
A what plant?
An amaryllis.
Oh, an amaryllis. You know, it's not really time to be planting out an amaryllis. It also depends where this listener is. If you are in a warm area, then you can certainly do that, but you must expect it to go dormant, and it will probably need to be having water withheld from it completely during its dormancy. So I would suggest, if you've got a potted amaryllis, it's going to flower, and straight after it flowers, it's going to start entering dormancy. Allow that to happen, reducing the watering as it goes. And when you see the leaves have died down, take it out of the pot, or even just take the whole pot and store it away in your garage, and then plant it out again as soon as the weather begins to warm up.
In other words, that have come in, I've got a, I want to create an autumn feel in my garden, wanting to bring those beautiful bronze and browns and golds. How would I go about it?
Well, obviously now you're going to be looking at deciduous plants, and I do appreciate your taste. Listen, a lot of people are scared of indigenous deciduous plants. They think that, oh, you know, it's going to look nice in the summer and it's going to look horrible the rest of the year. No, in autumn you get the beautiful colors quite often, and then in winter you have the framework of the branches, and that is an aesthetic that we shouldn't overlook. It's actually very attractive. I love that side. It's seasonal. We live with the seasons. It brings it home to us. It becomes a sculptural feature in the garden during winter. Now, for lovely autumn color, you're probably going to be looking at your framework of shrubs and trees more than anything that's small. So I would, for example, suggest the fiddlewood, which is absolutely beautiful. I don't know if you know the fiddlewood. It turns bright, bright orange. Fantastic.
And sorry, Andrea, the spread and the height?
Of the fiddlewood?
That's
that one is it's a large shrub, small tree. Always sometimes difficult to draw the line between the two.
Okay.
I would say I've seen them at least 5 or 6 or even 7 meters high. But normally you see them a bit smaller in people's gardens. You know, it takes time for them to reach their height. Very attractive though, in the autumn, very intense orange. Then you also want to bring in maybe some yellows and some reds, and there's a lot that you can do there. Japanese maples, if you can get your hands on them. Beautiful in summer, gorgeous foliage. And then the lovely, lovely autumn colors. That is, of course, absolutely stunning. Here in my area, oak trees are sort of considered to be quite iconic and historic and so on. And the most colorful of those is definitely the pin oak, which does red, orange, yellow, all of those colors. And yes, that is an investment in the future, it's a well worthwhile investment. There are so many wonderful plants with autumn color that one can use. Even the white stinkweed, which I think is quite common in your area, it's beautiful, and that's a nice fast-growing tree. Just be careful that you get that one and not there's an oriental one that's potentially problematic. So I would suggest getting the indigenous one and making sure it's the indigenous one. Usually you can tell by feeling the leaf. The oriental one is a smooth leaf, and the indigenous one has a rough leaf. It feels almost like sandpaper when you rub the surface. And they're, of course, beautiful in autumn. And then in the springtime, you get this absolute haze of beautiful green buds appearing over them, and then they burst into leaf. It's beautiful, and I'm sure you know the sight.
Definitely. You know, we sometimes yearn for that. We have a very short autumn period, a very, very short one here in our part of the world, so you don't really get the true effect unless you go out and drive out in the countryside and then you see some of them. But some people would love to create it, and I must say to you, and I was listening to you very intently when you spoke about the stark beauty, and I think that's important. There's deciduous trees, you know, whilst it loses leaves, it has own beauty come winter, and many of us do not, or sometimes overlook that beauty, because just looking at the sculptural, outline makes it such a wonderful, I'm always thinking of a dark gray sky, and you see this beautiful, tree without leaves and so forth, and it's such a wonderful display. And some of us seem to miss the beauty because we're looking for green all around.
Yes, I think each season has its own beauty, and every season has something special about it. And if you take, for example, I do quite a lot of writing for North American gardening companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this thing that they talk about called winter interest. And basically what it means is you have something there that has no leaves. It is dormant, but it's creating a sculptural feature that lasts through the winter. I mean, they sort of, you know, 6 feet under the snow or whatever the time. So they're grateful for anything that sticks up over that. So we just have to remember how fortunate we are with our weather.
Definitely, definitely. Despite all the heat that we've had, we still had some beauty around us. Lots, not some, but lots and lots of beauty.
Absolutely. I always say there's two times of the year that are difficult for plants. A lot of people think midwinter is the only time that's difficult for plants. I will say that midsummer is also difficult for plants. Remember, we're looking at two extreme seasons. One is very cold. It's reached its extreme of what is chilly. And the other is very hot, and it's reached the extreme of how hot it's going to get. So plants generally are like human beings. They're comfortable with a happy medium. For example, the average plant, okay, there are always exceptions depending on where the plant is expected to grow. But would you like to hazard a guess, what is the most comfortable temperature for a plant on average?
Around about 15 to 16 degrees.
More like around about 21, which according to research is the time when we take off our jerseys. And we're comfortable with the temperature. We're not too hot. We're not too cold. Apparently, around about 21 is. And we used to work in a radio studio, which had an air conditioner with a temperature on it, and I found that that worked very well for me. 21 degrees was great.
Well, I'd be definitely still needing a jersey at that temperature. Mama, don't worry. I'm still wearing mine at 21. You know, Andrea, that I think, like you said. You know, we don't understand the complexities and so forth surrounding plants and so forth. And it's an interesting observation that 21 degrees for a plant, which is quite I don't know, is that cold enough? Not hot enough? Is that how you'd sum it up?
I would say that's the perfect time. You're not sweltering with heat. You're not dying of cold. Of course, there are exceptions. I'm talking about a median here. I'm talking about what is average, according to experts that I've read, but I've tried it for myself, and I'm usually quite happy around about 21 degrees.
Well, I don't know. I'll have to just check that out the next time. I don't think I know. As soon as there's a little bit of cloud cover, then I'm dashing and looking around for something to cover. So maybe different people react differently, Andrea.
That's true. You know, you get tropical souls, and then you get those that absolutely can't abide the heat. They can't function in the heat. So yes, but we do know that the extremes of temperature, extremely hot, extremely cold, we're not comfortable. I can guarantee you the plants are not comfortable at those times either.
Andrea, one last question. We've just got a little bit, I think we've got about 3 or 4 minutes. A question coming about a compost heap. I've been making my own compost, and I've been throwing lots of, tomatoes and what else? I'm just trying to read. She said lots of vegetables with seeds in them. I've even thrown a couple avocado bits. Would it make a difference?
You know, anything organic is good, with the exception of potatoes, because they could have nematodes in them, which are tiny microscopic worm that affects roots and so on. Potato peelings, preferably not. But anything else that's organic is great. And you never know, your avocado pits might start growing on your compost heap. It happened to a friend of mine. She's now establishing an avocado forest.
Wow.
I said, how did you get that right? She said, no, that she had them on the compost heap and they started to grow.
Well, that would happen, wouldn't it?
I think it's a nice compost heap with some nice rich compost, and I was a little avocado seed, well, I'd definitely grow.
And one question still coming through about bougainvillea. How do I get different colors of bougainvillea in my garden? I live in the south of Johannesburg.
Now, south of Johannesburg, you do have the problem of frost. So you're going to have to be very observant about your garden before you actually plant. Look at where your neighbors have planted bougainvilleas. There are always microclimates, so you could be in an area where the winters are not that harsh. Because these little pockets are tend to be warmer. So look at your neighbor's gardens as well, and look at where they've planted their bougainvilleas. Observe your own garden this winter. Don't plant your bougainvillea yet. You want to establish it prior to any cold weather. So I would not do that now. I would wait until the danger frost is past in spring. Now use your winter time cleverly. In the morning, go out and have a look where the frost lies thick on the ground. And obviously those are now not the places where you are going to plant bougainvillea. That is your limiting factor there, listener. It's the cold. And once you've identified the right places, you can then go and look for your different colors of bougainvillea. You will find them at any Light of the Garden garden center, especially once the weather starts warming up. And let them get the best start possible, growing as strongly as possible during their first summer. And then they stand a good chance of surviving the winter. If you're really in a very, very cold area and you're still desperate to get a bougainvillea, you can also look at doing them in containers and overwintering them in a frost-free area such as a patio or something like that. It is an alternative. Bougainvilleas, especially certain cultivars, do very well in large pots.
Well, thank you very much for that, and you take care, and we'll chat to you again soon, and everything of the best, and enjoy the rain.
Fantastic. I am enjoying the rain, and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thank you, Ta. Bye-bye. And that was Andrea telling us, giving us some wonderful watch points, and very, very knowledgeable. And as you've heard, lots of information to share, lots to tell us. And I think I've learned so much. And each time she comes on, we learn more and more. And this week, I spoke about bulbs, spoke about different things to be done at this particular time of the year. And remember, every week, if you have any queries, any questions, please forward it to me at Radio Islam, or you could call me, or even email me at isv@radioislam.co.za. And when we have our guests, we could talk to them about it. If there's any particular thing that you'd like us to discuss, any aspect of the gardening, please also get back to me so that we could put that up for discussion. That's all for me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.